I mean, he has a...
The House Committee on Education will come to order, please.
I thought of mine was tough.
And I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2062 and 2063. And first, to give an introduction to the issue, we're going to have Senator Vicky Walker and Representative Peter Buckley, who have put a lot of work into this effort over the course of the past year or more. Senator, Senator Walker never has paper.
I'm not, Madam Chair, I am not going to the paperless system. I don't care what people say. It's just not going to work for me. All right. Did you want me to go first?
Senator, I always defer to you unless you want me to go first.
All right. Well, Madam Chair, Vicky Walker, State Senator from District 7, and I appreciate the opportunity to be in front of your committee. You have some new folks here. And on that basis, I want to go through a little bit of a background explanation about how we got to where we are today with House Bill 2062. And it's going to take us back just a teeny bit, so I hope you're going to bear with me on that. Because these files are indicative of the work that I've been doing and my colleagues have been doing since 2005. So let me start out by saying that when a student attends public school in Oregon, they deserve at least two things, hopefully many more, but at least, and one of those is to receive a good education, and the second one is to be protected from harm. So it's our responsibility as elected officials, community members, parents, educators, the whole village. It takes a whole village to raise a child. You've heard that before. It takes a whole village to protect our children and to make sure that our schools are safe when we stop predators at the school door. I've worked diligently since my assignment as committee chair of the Senate Education Committee since 2005 to protect our children and enhance their educational opportunities. I did so not alone, but with bipartisan support from my committee, from House Education Chair Linda Flores, from my wonderful colleague and House Chair Buckley, and also, Madam Chair, we are most pleased to turn the reins over to you and Senator Haas to take up the rest of our work. So with that, I'll give you the brief background that I mentioned. In 2005, in response to the Bolera case in the Salem-Keizer School District, we passed Senate Bill 755, and it's in here. If you need anything, I'll be able to quote verbatim. It directed all school districts to adopt and post policies on the reporting of child abuse. The bill required employees to report the suspected abuse to their supervisor and to law enforcement or DHS. And Senate Bill 755 required an employee to be placed on administrative leave if the education provider believed there was reasonable cause to support the report. That was a very critical piece and a very comforting piece to know that we were going to take quick action. Most importantly for me, it opened up the disciplinary records of educators convicted of specific crimes to anyone who asked. The records provision had to be adjusted, however, in 2007 because of a school district on the South Coast taking the position that once the employee was gone, they didn't need to comply and provide the records. So we came back and changed that provision, and that was in Senate Bill 380. So now, once that was done, even newspaper reporters, which they did, were able... to learn how these incidents happen and what we could do to prevent them from happening again. I'm choking a little. We just got off the floor and I ran over here. Additionally, in 2007, the legislature passed Senate Bill 379, directing districts to provide school employees with training on child abuse prevention and identification. The training must also be made to parents, legal guardians, and students so they, too, can learn about grooming behaviors, thank you very much, the signs and symptoms of child abuse, and how and where a suspected abuse can be made. Our interim committee, both committees, received a report on the trainings, and I'm happy to say that districts have done a fairly good job of meeting that requirement. Additionally, DHS was required to report back, and Representative Comp will remember this, report back to the mandatory reporter, so the mandatory reporter wouldn't be left hanging wondering what happened to this report, what happened to this child. Law enforcement We did not make that same requirement on because they have too many things to do. So we figured we would get that information. As a result of all this work, you as mandatory reporters now get training. You had your training this year on child abuse, and that's because of all the work that we have done, making sure that those who are mandatory reporters know what their job is. So then in response to the 2008 newspaper stories on sex abuse in our schools, our respective committees once again responded appropriately and thoughtfully. We determined there was still work to be done, but that a limited session did not allow us enough time to accomplish the intensive study or the intensive work that would be necessary to produce well-drafted legislation that you see before you and we'll talk about in a moment. In the meantime, in order to alleviate the backlog, I worked closely with Representative Buckley to make sure that we could reduce the backlog at the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, and Ms. Chamberlain is here, and she's just been a great partner. The 2008 Legislative Assembly approved two extra positions. We added the staff and additional resources to reduce those backlogs and a budget note requiring them to report back. They've done so, and the backlog has been significantly reduced. That chronology now brings us up to the present, to the interim of 2008, Madam Chair. Ms. Richardson, the committee administrator for the interim committees, as well as my Senate committee, and she continues on in the Senate, prepared for you a timeline from February to October of 2008, and I believe you have that at your desk. And this timeline is pretty comprehensive about the work that we did. We didn't sit on our thumbs. Representative Buckley and I, as chairs of our respective committee, took this seriously, and we set about to make sure we could solve this problem. This chronology illustrates to you the exhaustive work of our two committees. The work groups were extensive and inclusive. I want to emphasize that word, inclusive. You will see there how many people participated. Participation was encouraged, it was welcomed, and no one was excluded from having their voices heard. And in fact, Ms. Richardson took notes and kept minutes of the meetings. It's probably one of the few times I didn't do as many notes as I normally do. I did not attend all of the work group meetings, but I know that I attended some. So then in October 27th to be exact, on 2008, our committees met jointly to review the proposals that had been drafted by the respective work groups. We spent several hours in hearing that day reviewing every bill draft in detail. And Ms. Richardson prepared them for us in a notebook that I have before me, and we went through every single bill draft. Later, Chair Buckley and I met by telephone with Ms. Richardson to discuss how we would combine the 13 bill concepts and how we would divide them up between the chambers. Your committee has before you House Bill 2062 and 2063. And the Senate has the other Senate bills that they're going to hear this afternoon. And one of them went to the Senate Judiciary Committee. I realize I've taken a lot of your time today, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, to lay out the background, but I thought it was necessary for some of you who are new and some of you who may not have been serving on this committee in the past. And at this time, with your permission, I would like to specifically address House Bill 2062, as I don't really have any concerns with 2063. Let me say at the outset, and I think Representative Buckley will agree with me, House Bill 2062 is the crowning achievement to all the work we have done to date. We will put an end to either the perception or the reality that school districts are passing one abusive educator off to another. Because you'll hear argument that it's all a perception, it's not a reality, this doesn't happen. Well, it does happen, it has happened, but how often it happens, no one really knows. So we're going to put an end to all of that speculation. We will have some of the toughest laws in the country that ferrets out and quickly removes any educator who violates the sacred trust of a child. That's an incredible trust. I understand there are concerns about provisions of the bill, I believe, however, given the timeline that you have in front of you, there has been plenty of time to object and provide written language as to their objections. I'm at a loss, a complete loss, to understand the delay or why any organization that represents teachers would take no position on the bill, as indicated by this comment in your Statesman Journal earlier this week. Nonetheless, let's take a look at the bill, because I actually read the bill and I sat down with the bill and tried to understand where the objections were coming from. And we had a meeting earlier this week, Madam Chair, to discuss that. One of the concerns I've heard is that Section 1 of the bill is too broad, that a written authorization and release of personnel records is far too invasive, and that it would scoop up things in a personnel file that shouldn't be released to a future employer, things that, you know, just a personality difference with somebody or a whisper of something in a hallway. Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, let me point out to you what the bill says, because I think the bill is very clear. On page 1, line 10, and that's kind of the best way for me to look at a bill, is to give you the page number and the line number, it says that you must provide a written authorization and release described in subsection 2. And who provides that authorization? An applicant for a position in a school. Well, if you go to subsection 2, on lines 22 through 24, you will see that the relief they're asking for is limited to only those things described in section 1, little b, on lines 12 through 16. And you go back up to lines 12 through 16, and they say allegations of sexual misconduct or abuse as defined in ORS 419B.005. Nothing more, nothing less. No whispers, no personality disorders, no nothing. We're just talking about sexual misconduct or abuse. And to allay the fears of those who are concerned about the fabricated allegations of sex abuse, because they do occur, I will be frank with you, they do occur. Sometimes children make up stories. But we always believe a child, and then we try to prove the allegations. So should we have a case where we have fabricated allegations of sex abuse, we have a provision in Section 4B of the bill on page 3. I'll let you turn to that, lines 30 through 32. And that says that a district may not expunge information about sexual misconduct or child abuse from any documents in the personnel, investigative, or other files of a current or past employee unless the information could not be substantiated. There's your out. There is your exit for someone who feels that there's something in their file that was unsubstantiated and shouldn't go any further. But as I thought about that last night while I was going through my multitude of files and preparing for today, and I met with Chuck Bennett of COSA yesterday and we talked about that, I sent an email, a late night email, to Hannah Lai, Legislative Counsel, she's probably here in the room, and to Vicki Chamberlain, Director of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. I indicated that I had no knowledge of any process for expungement of an educator's personnel file. I'm well aware of criminal expungement. I've served on a judiciary committee for 10 years, been a court reporter for 25, so I'm well aware of that, but not aware of internal personnel files. So I asked for them to provide me some information and some suggestions. And let me read you the response. Ms. Chamberlain suggests that perhaps, quote, perhaps you could require the chief administrative officer to sign an affidavit that all the information in the file is true and correct to the best of their knowledge. The other thought I had is that it is unsubstantiated if they do not have an affidavit from a witness other than the supervising administrator. Those are good points. So let me add to that what Ms. Lai responded. Quote, since the goal appears to be to prevent a school district from hiding the history of an employee, perhaps the language could read, a school district may not expunge information from any documents in the personnel, investigative, or other files of a current or past employee that relates to a claim about sexual misconduct or child abuse that has been substantiated. I think that's a better approach. It's more direct. It doesn't have to set up a process where you have to worry about getting it out of the file. It just gets expunged. Now, the question I asked was, what about the liability? Because the bill says on page 2, up at the top somewhere here, that a school district is immune from liability should they provide the information requested by the future employer. Well, if you want to discuss information, as Ms. Lai says, if you want to discuss situations where the file has information about unsubstantiated claims, language could be inserted relating to removing and destroying any documents or information related to an unsubstantiated claim. As for the accuracy of a file, an employee already has the right, I didn't know this, an employee already has the right to review personnel records under ORS 652.750, and I see Representative Roblin, a former superintendent, nodding his head. He's well aware of that. Ms. Lai goes on to say, we may be able to establish an appeal process for what is in the record. But a more common approach is to allow the employee to place a rebuttal in the file that the employer is then obligated to send along with the information in question. This is the practice for the Fair Credit Reporting Act. I also liked Vicki's suggestions of saying that the file is true and accurate to the best of the administrator's knowledge. So here we have two suggestions that I think are appropriate to deal with this expungement section and allay any concerns that things are going to go in the personnel file to the next employer that shouldn't be there. So, and I'm going to leave that to future discussion of the committee, because I think that's a good conversation to have. I'd be happy to have that conversation as well, but I'm going to leave that in your hands at the moment. And so in conclusion, I want to say, Madam Chair and members of the committee, that I just have one final thought. My interests have always been very clear. I don't care what others have said. My interests have been very clear. We are here to protect our children and ensure they receive the kind of education they deserve. I support our teachers. In fact, my own son joined the profession this fall and teaches high school in the Bethel School District and absolutely loves it, and the kids love it. We talk about boundaries and we talk about things that happen in classrooms all the time, and we're going to be discussing boundaries over in the Senate this afternoon. But unfortunately, there are bad actors in every profession. There were bad actors in my profession as a court reporter. There are bad actors everywhere you go. It is our job to offer swift and severe punishment to sexual predators who make their way into our education system, because when it comes to our children, there often is not a second chance. So that is where I come from. That is where I'm always going to be. And I was quite comfortable leaving my position as chair of the policy committee this session all on my own. I chose to leave that position to go to Ways and Means, but I was comfortable that we had done our work, that we've left it in good hands, and we know that your interests are the same as ours. And I really appreciate the opportunity to present it to you today, and I'll be here to answer questions. But I know my wonderful friend and colleague, Chair Buckley, would like to answer, add some comments as well.
Thank you, Senator. And with that, I think we'll hold questions until after Representative Buckley's had an opportunity to introduce himself too.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Peter Buckley, State Representative from South Jackson County. It's great to be with the House Education Committee. There's a reason why I always let Senator Walker go first, and you probably have figured it out. She covers pretty much everything, and then I can say, oh yeah, and that. And that too. I do want to make mention on some of the points that she made, emphasize them. First off, there's not a legislator in the building who's worked harder on this issue than Senator Walker. Her efforts have been continuous. They've been relentless in this field. It's been a pleasure to work with her on this, and I'm very proud of the work we've done on this effort. But she has been the lead on this effort for years now, and I give her great credit for that work. To touch base a little bit with Senator Walker did talk about the kind of the history of how this has all evolved, and those of you who were here in February understood what happened when the Oregonian articles came out in the last week of the February session, the kind of explosion that happened there. And we worked every hour we possibly could to try to figure out if there was something we could do in February, with I think it was 3 days left in the session. And we worked and we considered every option we possibly could. And we did work with the Teacher Standards and Practice Commission to find find out whether we go after the backlog of cases and start to put together the process that has resulted in the bills that you have in front of you today. And the point I want to make that I think is very important is that we didn't let this become a political issue. The safety of our children is not a political issue. The support for our teachers and for our education system is not a political issue. And we worked tremendously hard to make sure, as Senator Walker said, that every voice was heard, that this was a comprehensive approach to this very, very serious issue. It's been approached in a very, very serious way. I'm the father of three kids. At this moment, my youngest son is seen in the fourth grade classroom of Walker Elementary School in Ashland, Oregon.
Oh, good name.
And his safety means more than I can possibly say. He's being taught right now by a young woman named Amy Neeland, who is a remarkable teacher, fantastic teacher. And her success in her profession and her ability to serve kids like mine means more to me than I can possibly say. We have tried extraordinarily hard to find a way to address this issue that takes into account the passion that we all feel for the safety of our kids, with the rights and the support of the teachers who are on the front line teaching our kids, providing this service. And I can't emphasize enough the vast majority of our teachers in our school system don't get anywhere near these issues. They are not involved with these issues other than the training that they're getting now in terms of how to recognize sexual predators, etc. You know the teachers in your community. They're good people. They're doing great work. And Representative Kampf continuously, through this process, made sure we remembered the fact that when we're talking about teachers, we're talking about a tremendously dedicated, committed group of people. But we do have to look after those who do cross a line for whatever reason they do so. And that's what we're trying to do with these bills. I think we have a solid system in place. I think the bills in front of you make it even tighter. And I agree with Senator Walker that as we pass these bills through, we will have the strongest system we possibly can have. Will there be future work to be done? Yes, there will. Because one of the facts about sexual predators is that they tend to find a way. They'll find a way through almost any system. So we will keep revisiting this issue. But again, I'm very proud of the work that we've done, and I think this will have an impact in terms of the security of our kids and the feeling that that parents have when they drop their kids off at the school door. So again, Madam Chair, I can't emphasize anything more. Senator Walker did a great job of comprehensively talking away the process and the product that we ended up with. All I can say is I appreciate your willingness to now take this on and move it forward. I appreciate the time and consideration of your committee. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Are there questions for Representative Buckley or Senator Walker?
Madam Chair, actually, I do have.
Yes, Representative Maurer.
Senator Walker, you obviously know this bill very well. And on line 9 of page 1, it says, as former employers, schools or school districts. Is that broad enough? Is that language broad enough in your view to capture the other venues of education that take place in or out of the state of Oregon? Is there language that may broaden that? I guess my concern is, in reading this, that you can be employed in some other venue that is an educational experience, have a problem like that, and they parse the language, which people are really good at, and saying, well, that wasn't a school or that wasn't a school district. It is an ESD. It is a something else. And I'm just wondering if you had a comment on that.
Madam Chair and Representative Maurer, I do believe if you're talking about an ESD, they would come under the definition of school district, and legislative council could verify that for you. The relating clause to the bill is relating to misconduct by school employees, so it would have to be limited to educational institutions because of the relating clause. I'm not sure where else you'd like to go. You know, there are other places where children are abused. We have sporting organizations. You know, my concern is that coaches are not registered with TSPC, and I mean, that's been a real big thing for me, because there have been coaches in recent years who have abused children, sexually abused them. So I still want to get at that, and that's, I think we've got those bills on the Senate side about fingerprinting and background checks and things like that. But specifically, to address your question, Representative Bauer, I don't know where else you want to go here outside of the school venue, but I think this gets all the school venues. This gets a charter school. I mean, this gets any school district.
I accept that. Just I don't know, but I'm kind of throwing that out for the larger audience.
Okay.
Is the university a school? Does that fall under the legal definition of school?
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Maurer, that does. We had a lot of conversation about community colleges and universities, and it's a much more difficult. So we limited our discussion to K through 12, though you will find that one of the Senate bills that I'll be addressing this afternoon actually does include community colleges and universities, because we have an expanded options program in Oregon that we passed under my watch that allows children in high school to take classes in institutions of higher learning, and so they are then subjected to folks who are potential abusers of children. And, you know, and I just want to say over and over again, and I can't repeat it often enough, I am proud of the teachers who represent our state and teach our children. I'm proud that my son is one, and his significant other, who I was, is going to be my daughter-in-law if he'd ever pop the question. But are you listening, Adam? Anyway, she's in a master's program right now. I know. My husband says that all the time. She's in a master's program to become an elementary school teacher, and she's an aide at a school right now, and she'll be done at the end of the year. And you know, these are great people, but there are those who get into the system, and we're not talking just teachers also. We're talking educators. We're talking anyone who works in the school district, whether it be the janitor, you know, the librarian, the nursing assistant. I don't care. You know, it's all of these people. It's just not focused here on teachers. It's educators. So we're just trying to protect our kids, and this bill focuses really on the K-12 system.
Thank you, Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. Senator Walker, just for clarification, because what I heard in your first part of your testimony was that you felt that the bill really did meet the language needs that we were trying to accomplish, but then at the end you gave a couple of suggestions for refinement. So
thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Comp, because you're right. I said both things to cover my behind.
Okay.
I believe the structure of this bill and the language of this bill is very good. I don't think we need to change any piece of it except Section 4.
Okay, thank you.
And that just came to my attention as I was reading the bill. You know how often we write these things and we read them, but we don't really read them? And then you go back and you read it again and you're, wait a minute. And that question came up for me. I wrote it in a red pen yesterday on the bill and immediately called in some folks to have a conversation about that. And that's why I sent that off to Legislative Council. And I do believe that one piece, Section 4B, should be changed to reflect the comments that were made by Legislative Council.
Thank you for the clarification.
You're most welcome.
Okay, Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. I think for me, we're not really talking about the teacher. It's already been determined that this person has a record. We're talking about administration and what the administration does with the information and whether or not they do diligence in letting other districts become aware that this is a problem in this particular employee. So I am very comfortable as long as it's a substantiated case, because I am concerned that these false accusations do occur. And, you know, as a former employer of a lot of teachers, I lost a young man because he got tired of the continual harassment. And he didn't do anything wrong, and he was actually investigated, and it was determined he didn't do anything wrong, but he left the profession. So I think we really need to be careful about how we determine what somebody has done. But this is, for me, this is a bad administration. And let's hope that they read the rules as well as they read the last ones.
I appreciate that. And Madam Chair, I want to let Representative Buckley respond to that because we've had a lot of conversation about that.
Madam Chair, Representative Van Orman, I think you make an excellent point. And this is the sheer fact that we were not requiring districts simply to perform and record background checks previously was a revelation to me. But we are focusing on what's the process? What's the process that has to be followed? What's the best process? And how do we make sure it gets followed? And you make an excellent point about administration, because we do have a teacher standards practice commission. We do have a system that can work. Our job is to make it work.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, Representative Van Orman, I will tell you that is why this is a crowning achievement, because this was the missing piece. This was the missing piece. We took care of the educators, and we took care of the training, but gosh darn it, we missed the administration. And so this is that missing piece that plugs the hole, and that's why I think this is going to get us where we need to be on making sure Oregon really is the toughest state in the nation in terms of protecting our kids.
Are there further questions from the committee? Thank you both very much for taking time to come and for all of the work that's gone into this. I know both of you put a tremendous amount of effort and negotiation in the interim. And Senator Walker, I know that this has been a career of work. And as a parent that has four kids in the public school system, I thank you for looking out for their safety and the safety of all of us that have kids.
You're very welcome, Madam Chair. And it has been a lot of work. I've been pleased to undertake it as a survivor of sexual abuse as a child, not from an educator. It was pretty important to me to make sure that our children have the trust that they expect from an adult. And I was put in a position of chairing a committee that allowed me to address some really egregious circumstances that just arose right here in our capital city. And I want to leave the committee and let you know that the Salem-Keizer School District stepped up. And they have a tremendous training program. They have tremendous processes in place to address these issues. And I am confident that there will never be a case like Joseph Valera, happening again in this district. And I really would hope that other districts can model their example because their training program is just phenomenal. And I really want to thank you for allowing me that opportunity to say that. And we are ready and able to have a conversation with anyone about these bills as we move forward, but I have complete confidence that you all know what you're doing. I trust all of you because I've worked with many of you and the new ones coming in. It's wonderful to see you here, and I've just provided you the background that gets you where you need to be, but I know that you can get us home. I'm going to count on that. So thank you.
Thank you both very much. Next, could we please have Chuck Bennett and Lori Satinsteel, please? Good afternoon. Welcome. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for the opportunity. Okay. Madam Chair, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Madam Chair, we'd rather be here talking about other issues, and I would like to be talking with you about improving student achievement, highlighting the quality of our school leaders, teachers, and staff, the glaring facility needs for the 21st century in our public schools, and the mounting threat we face from the current fiscal condition. I think all of these are the kinds of issues I hope we spend our time on. But today, we'll just accept these are a topic for another day. Today we're going to be asked to address a fundamental issue, and that's student safety. And we'll be doing it in this committee and in the Senate committee. I have no doubt, Madam Chair, this is a topic that's on all of our minds, particularly after this past weekend's events in Portland, on the streets of Portland. These are tragic events. The kinds of issues we're talking about in this bill are tragic events. They're the kinds of thing that give us all sleepless nights that are in education. More specifically, the bill before you today asks us to highlight, we think, the current status of state law, school district policies, and community efforts regarding child abuse, and more specifically, how we deal with school staff and student relations. First, I'd like to do just a brief overview of where we are, and I will try not to reproduce Senator Walker's really, I thought, encyclopedic look at what's been going on here. But I do think it's good to understand where we are and to recognize the work done on this really by Senator Walker and Representative Buckley, as well as your predecessors on these committees, both right. The House and Senate, those of you who are here and those of you who are new to this committee. These are very difficult issues, ones that, of course, everyone's discomfort rises, but we've done a lot. We've really done quite a bit in this area. Obviously, there's more to do, and hence you're going to see these bills over the next today and then I think over the next couple of weeks. Current Oregon law, we think, reinforces the shared obligation and responsibility within school districts to act decisively against those who perpetrate abuse or exhibit borderline behavior toward our children. Oregon law requires school districts and the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission to conduct criminal record checks of employees and licensees. School districts are required to develop policies and provide annual training on the prevention and identification of child abuse. All school employees are mandatory reporters and must immediately report abuse to both their supervisor and an outside third-party investigatory agency, either local law enforcement or the Department of Human Services. All allegations of abuse by school employees are required to be fully investigated and accused employee removed from direct, unsupervised contact with students. Current Oregon law, we believe, ensures the transparency of the disciplinary process of school districts, and I think Senator Walker outlined how that has been opened up over the past couple of sessions to make it clear, to the point that it is readily available to newspaper reporters and to any member of the public that wants to find out what's going on relative to these kinds of disciplinary cases. TSPC is required to disclose its decisions and proceed with charges against an accused school employee under investigation to the complainant, the employing school district, an accused employee. TSPC is required on an annual basis to distribute to all school districts across Oregon the names and of licensed educators who've been disciplined for sexual abuse. All charges resulting in disciplinary action for sexual abuse are a permanent part of a school employee's personnel file. School districts, whether the current or past employer, are required to disclose to anyone who makes a request the disciplinary records within a personnel file of a school employee convicted of a crime. Upon request from a law enforcement agency, the Department of Human Services, or the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, a school district is compelled by law to provide the records of investigation of suspected child abuse by school employees or former school employees. My colleague, Lori Satenspiel from OSBA, I believe it's been distributed, provided you with copies of school policies and programs to help out with these goals, and she'll go over them with you to kind of give you a look at what we're up to. But, Madam Chair, this is all a work in progress, and I think Senator Walker underscored that. We have been at this for a couple of sessions now. We're at it again for a third session. These are difficult issues, and figuring out all the different permutations have been one of the real difficulties in dealing with it. During the interim, Senator Walker and Representative Buckley continued to focus on these issues and focus our attention on these issues. They held numerous work group sessions, and they included all stakeholders, and any other interested party that wanted to participate in them. We didn't just talk about these issues. We worked on areas that needed further clarification in state policy in these matters, or provided additional tools to districts aimed at either correcting deficiencies in existing practices or providing clarification of expectations regarding district policies and practices. We trust folks with our children, and we particularly trust them in situations where they have unsupervised contact with children, and these are the issues that we're working at. That work product is what you're hearing today. And that's also, I think, what you'll be hearing if you happen to go over to the Senate. You'll hear some more of it. We'll get to hear it all today. It is one of the definitions of leadership, I think, in this body to challenge us to look at our practices in new ways. And Representative Buckley and Senator Walker have epitomized that definition of leadership. They've really asked us to take on, these are not topics we like facing. I don't know if that's coming across, but these are not topics of great comfort, and they're of tremendous concern. Change in these areas is challenging because change can lead to a whole variety of new policies. It requires new board action. It requires administrators. You've been hearing about administrators in this and the role of administration. It requires administrators to take another look at how they're doing business. Are they doing it appropriately? Are they doing it in line with policies that you all would expect us to meet? And in this case, I think we're starting to look at some solutions. And certainly, there are going to be discussions of amendments. Senator Walker mentioned, I believe, that we had talked about Section 4. How do you expunge records, and who expunges? Who gets to give the okay on a record being expunged? Is kind of the information included in Section 4 that we talked about. And frankly, I think we're working on that. We hope before your work session, in cooperation with Senator Walker, to come to you either with new language or an explanation of the existing language that'll give you all comfort that you won't have to visit this issue again, that the issue's being dealt with in this particular area, that the records that come forward are good, clean, solid records that can be used by any school district, or we'll find a way to correct it. I think that's our job. We have other groups that I believe are looking at other kinds of amendments for clarification purposes. Ultimately, though, the school districts and school administrations, I think, stand ready to work with whatever policies you hand us in this area. We are prepared to take on, if need be, the court cases that result. If court cases result, we will do them with the kind of, I think, sensitivity and fairness you would expect of us as we deal with employees under investigation, unadjudicated, and that we will, at bottom line, as we have for this many years, concern ourselves ultimately with the safety of children. That's the bottom line issue here, and I think the message is clearly delivered and clearly accepted. We're very excited about working our way through these bills. We're even more excited about not having any more hearings on these issues in the future and resolving this issue. And, you know, I think we all pray that there will come a day when we don't have to talk about the safety of children in their public schools. That's just, I cannot believe that I'm here again for the third session talking about the safety of children in public schools in the company, unsupervised company, of their teacher, their janitor, a secretary, a principal, a vice principal, or a superintendent. I mean, I'm embarrassed to have to talk about it again. So let's get this one behind us. And we thank you, Madam Chair, for your leadership to take us down that road. And we'll get there with you this time.
Thank you. And I just would want to put on the record, I think that it's certainly my intention that we want to have good policy and a good bill that comes out of this. What's helpful to the committee and to committee members in responding to that is knowing specifically what the concerns are. So vague references to there may be amendments that are coming without the ability to know what they might be about, it makes it very difficult for us to engage with you to make that happen. So I would encourage folks to be very clear about what the issues are so that each of the members of the committee can engage in problem solving and make sure we have the best bills possible that come.
I certainly hear your message, Madam Chair. I do not have amendments, mm-hmm. so I cannot be specific. Those who do can be specific. Okay. And if and I have no problem in looking at anybody's amendments along with everyone else and give you my comments from the perspective of the folks that I represent and how successful we can be in working with them. I could give you my conjecture of what I think's out there, what I've been able to discern in discussions. The one I am most aware of is how to expunge records. I think there will be amendments relative to this bill or other bills that deal with, I think, the concern Representative Van Orman raised relative to those cases where there is a real lack of resolution. But that's only a guess. I've not seen these amendments. I'm just waiting for them like you are. So I apologize for the vagueness of the reference. It's because of the vagueness of the information that I have.
Thank you. And I think just for the committee generally, as we work these, if you have amendments that you're working on, we're moving towards a work session this week, if we could all be communicating about that and sharing that with one another. I don't currently have any amendments or suggestions except for what we've received from Senator Walker, and I will share with each of you as I receive those and hope that we can all do that with each other. Time to come. Roxy, did you have...
Well, we also have proposed amendments on 2063 from the Teachers Standards and Practices Commission.
Yeah, we support anything the teachers and students. Vicki, Ms. Chamberlain does a great job of explaining her agency, and I have no help when it comes to that.
Thank you. Lori.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, Lori Satinspiel for the Oregon School Boards Association, representing 1,400 locally elected volunteer school board members. I just want to highlight, Chuck did a great job of going over the bill and background. We did also, were involved in the interim work on this issue. I've put before you and pulled some of our policies, sample policies around these issues to hopefully get at the issues of administration and processes to a suspected or an allegation. If I might back up a little, during the committee we were asked to, in the interim, asked to give a progress report on Senate Bill 379, which is the bill that Senator Walker highlighted. And I just gave the chair a copy of all the districts that responded. What I asked was, how are you training staff? How are you training, or how are you bringing this child abuse issue into the classroom? And what are you doing for parents? Who is conducting those trainings? And what assistance do you need? It's a very comprehensive list, and I would be happy to supply it electronically to folks on the committee, but I just wanted to be sure that you had some information about what districts were doing. I also brought a copy of the most recent Salem-Keizer publication on their training and efforts to get the message out to parents and what's available for a workshop in that area. Again, a little background on our OSBA's policy department. They write sample policies based on law. There's three types of policies. There's a recommended, there's a required, or highly recommended, excuse me, required and optional. So laws are passed at the end of session. Our policy department will sit down and figure out what kind of policies the districts need to know about what the law changes and what impacts the district. If a law is changed, they'll look at it and say what kind of changes you need to have for your policies. Again, they're required, or they're highly recommended, or they're optional. And again, it's local issue for the district to decide what they need and what they want to do in those areas. And again, I've just given you some samples. Specifically to the bill, Section 10
I may have some amendments. I would be concerned about the report that the needs to go to the board about suspensions and terminations. If I'm not sure all of you are aware that the district, the board, is part of an appeal process. And if you were to report terminations and allegations along with any or too many specifics, that appeal process might be impacted. And I would just want to work a little harder in that area to be sure of what kind of report and, you know, boards know about terminations. Sometimes they don't know specifics, and that is because of the appeal process. And so with that, I'd be happy to field any questions.
Are there questions for either of our panelists?
Yeah, I just want to make a statement because I have been on this education committee now. This will be my third term. And this is a very difficult subject to deal with. As an administrator, it was always one, and our district, I felt, did a very good job of doing what it needed to do to protect kids. And I can only say I think that's true of all of the organizations you're going to hear from today, whether it's TSPC, whether it's COSA, whether it's OSBA, whether it's OEA. All of them care about this thing immensely. And one of the things that I find interesting is we're in it for the third year because of what we started in the first year, and they were all there. Because every time you put in a series of bills that create something different, it exposes other kinds of things, and everybody was at the table the next time to fix those. And I'm hopeful that we get to that point, because this last group, I mean, they hadn't even been implemented before we had the next problem. So, I mean, we haven't given any of these things time to work their way through the system to show how good they are, because I think the work that was done last session and the session before by all of the people in this room and the committees was really great. And what it did is it showed where we had some problems, because it was addressing them. And because of that, we sit here today one more time trying to make sure all of those things that in fact, the previous work done by all of these people here had exposed allows people to do the next thing. And we need to make sure that as we do that, and I really appreciate both these people being here, that we make sure that the liability is covered for those board members that sit there on those boards trying to do all the right things, that the teachers are protected as they should be, as Representative Van Orm said, and that the people out here who represent those organizations have the ability to help their organizations do all the right things. And I'm really pleased so far about how we're doing that, and I just wanted to say that, you know, the people in this long list of people should be commended for the actions they've taken to do this. No one's tried to put anything under the rug. Everybody's tried to put everything out on the table to find the best ways. And it's a difficult situation to do that in, but I appreciate people coming forward and expressing those things and the reasons for them as they have here. So that was just a comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Roblin. Are there other questions, comments? Representative Dimbro.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Going back to your concern about Section 10, Lori, it does seem to me that it's important that a school board have a sense of what's going on in their district. So is there a way that this can be addressed in a summary kind of fashion, without necessarily, well, certainly not in dealing with works in progress or works that may progress to them? Are you thinking about something along those lines?
Chair Gelser, Representative Dimbro, yes, I've been just chatting with our board development, and I think it's a little bit has to do with the administrator and what they're sharing with the board, and obviously they're sharing information. It's just this was a little unclear about what that report to the board should contain, and I think we can solve it. I think it's important. Is that?
Yes. Okay. Thank you. And Madam Chair, just to follow up, I just want to say, many of you know that I myself have a long record of leadership in faculty association work at the college level, and I want to say that I'm really proud of the work that our association was able to do in preventing misconduct and dealing with misconduct when it arose. I think that no one in the profession wants to see this kind of thing happening and students being taken advantage of. Frankly, no matter their age, from the moment that the teacher is in a position of influence. And so, I applaud our attention to this. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Comp.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. And Chuck and Lori, as we move through the process, and I just have one little concern that's out there, and that is when OIRs are developed, and particularly for the practicing administrator, when my predecessors left me files, school employee files, sometimes there was a range of a plethora of really positive notes in a school file, and then there's some that had little notes that you didn't want to know what they meant, if you knew what they meant. That when we do the OARs, that there is a clear identification of appropriate documentation in a, not the formal human resources file in the district office, but what administrators put in a file in their desk. I think a clarification list might be helpful so that we don't leave things or put things in places that do not serve a real positive purpose.
Madam Chair, Representative Comp, you're recalling for me testimony I've given in previous hearings on this issue because of the really interesting nature, let's just say, of personnel files, that this has confined and this discussion is confined to those portions of a file related specifically to the kind of misconduct that we're talking about today, hopefully would in part deal with the issue you're describing. But I think that it also points up, and hopefully this kind of discussion, along with perhaps even in rule, set up a standard for the inclusion of statements or thoughts or in some cases just wild opinion in somebody's personnel file, and because apparently someday it may well become public, and I think everybody involved would be wondering what is this doing here. So I am glad that we are very carefully, and I believe it's clear in the bills that we see in front of the two committees today, this is a very confined area, but it does point to, I think, the point that Senator Walker made and that she and I have discussed, which is expunging those records to make sure that we are talking what we are talking about very specifically here. Personnel files really are not something that should be moved about freely the way they exist today. And so this is something we got to be very careful of. And it also runs to another point that we're very supportive of, that a lot of the detail in this is going to be done by rule, which I think will allow, you all have set a very clear policy direction if you move this bill. You've set it clearly in the past with bills that have been moved by your preceding legislatures, we can really get down to some of the very nitty-gritty issues that really aren't appropriate in a policy-making body. It's one of the reasons I don't get real excited about some of the definitions I know others are concerned about, because they reference, we'll go to the state board or we'll go to TSPC for rulemaking, and I think those are in many ways far more appropriate bodies for the kind of specificity rather than have it out here with you guys. I just don't think that works well in this kind of arrangement. You're not the right people to make those calls, frankly.
I don't want to get into that level of nitty gritty.
Thank you. Representative Springer.
Yes, thank you, Chair Gelser. And I'm pretty sure I have a question wrapped up in this. Lori, you referenced Section 10, subsection A is I think what you were talking about, suspensions and terminations of employees, and how those are reported to the board. And I've sat on those boards, and I've sat on the end where we heard that appeal, and I put the boundaries up saying I don't want to hear this because I know that we're going to go to this step. So the question is, when you reference that, what is some of your thinking as far as how to clarify that? Because the language here says terminations and suspensions of employees made by the school during the previous 12 months, including the reasons for the suspensions and terminations. You can read two things into that. The reason is one word, or the reason is the story.
And so that does cause me some concern only for the fairness of when it gets to the appeal level.
Chair Gelser,
did you pick a question out of there?
It's still processing. Maybe we should talk offline if you have some good ideas.
Okay, so you're just not there yet.
I'm not quite there yet, and I know we're moving quickly, so I need to get a little bit better handle on that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Representative Van Orman.
Well, thank you, Chair Gelser. I was having a debate in my own head about oral reports versus written report, and then I realized, well, if you give an oral report, it's still written because it will be in the minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing then, the question came up with Representative Comp's comment about what's in a personnel file. And I don't know where I picked up this information, but there are directives. I think it may be in Head Start performance standards. It may be back when I was doing a project for Clackamas County personnel on record keeping, or it could have been the library's got a guideline or the Office of Personnel Management that talks about what's in a personnel file and what's not. So it sort of supports what you're saying, Chuck, that there's a lot of information out there that would be helpful without going to the rules and law.
Yeah, I agree with you, Madam Chair, Representative Van Orman. I agree with you. There are, I think, and I found this in talking with school districts, they're really, given the number and the sizes and the differences in sophistication among our districts, who's handling personnel, who does the hiring? I mean, that was one of the surprising conversations. One of my concerns has always been, could we solve this if people would just call the references when you get a teacher application? Just call the previous district and ask a few questions and get the answers. What I found out is, in some cases, that's not the rule, that's the exception. And in talking with professional human resource directors out there, they will often say, I came in to a situation where the assistant principal was serving essentially as the HR director, and I was kind of surprised at all of the HR situation, including hiring practices, what was going in personnel files, the lack of policy relative to personnel files. This is an area of growth in school districts. It's also an area that is limited by resources, by expertise, by size of district, things like that. So there's some work to be done there, and I think Representative Comp makes just a really good point. At some point, we may want to address the Board of Education about this and see if there's something we can do to more standardize and qualify what's in those files.
Development and training. Thank you. Are there further questions or comments? Representative Dimbro.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, just following up on that, Section 4 is, addresses or, prohibits districts from expunging information unless it's been unsubstantiated. So to date, does OSBA recommend to districts that they expunge information that has been unsubstantiated after a period of time? Or, is there a practice about that, or is there unsubstantiated allegations just lying around in a lot of people's files that maybe shouldn't be there?
I'm
going to
take a crack at
that. If not, I think maybe there should, it should
yeah.
be. I think you could detect that in the question.
Gee, I hope not. But I think it also points again to the discussion of this expunging these records and who's involved in it and how that's done. There we go.
I think we passed a bill a few years ago that gave staff access to the record and said that they should check it. And since that's happened, most of the time, associations and others encourage their employees once a year to ask the district to see their record, and that process then is looked at with the employee and the school district. If there's things that they think they want, there's a process that we have that's been established on how they can go about doing that, whether they put in a letter or whatever. So I think they're better. Again, I think it goes back to each school district and how many people and personnel they have, because they don't really have an HR person. It's hard to get all that information out. And so we have that going back to systemization. We need to do some of that stuff and help those smaller districts with a way to do that. But I think that has improved since then. I think there were times when it went for many, many, many years and people didn't even know there was a record up there until they got ready to leave. So I think that's improved.
Which is odd when you consider that we were all told we had a permanent record, and
Well, and I think I have a follow-up to that. When we were dealing with a very similar issue over on the DHS side, what we learned over the course of the past year is that even when there's a substantiated allegation, the person that's been accused of doing that, even upon substantiation, isn't always informed, A, that it's been substantiated, or B, that it's been substantiated, or A, that an accusation has ever been made in the first place. So even though there's a process to go back through, is it possible that you could have a teacher out there in the world that has a file about an unsubstantiated allegation that they never even knew had been made against them?
Chair Gelser, what I understand from the field, because I did ask the question about what happens with an unsubstantiated investigation, it does not go in the employee file. It goes into an investigation file.
Okay.
That gets to Representative Dembro's question.
Yeah, and that leads to a further question that, you know, often the situation that Representative Roblin is talking about, you know, where we encourage people to look at their official employee file, often there's very little in that official personnel file. But there may be a great deal, actually, in the working file or personal file, whatever it's called, by their supervisor. And those two can, you know, things can be in there that just kind of linger, and a supervisor leaves and it's passed on to the next one, and it can be, you know, potentially very destructive to an employee, you know, in those cases where it's an unsubstantiated allegation. I don't know what we do about that, but I think, you know, it is a problem that I think we need to be aware of.
Thank you. Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. Well, what we're talking about is education and training. And as a director of a private nonprofit, I had to do a lot of training to know some of the things I do about personnel, and I find it interesting in our discussion the differences between school districts and me out here in the nonprofit world of operation, and that somehow the people in the administration of schools are not necessarily getting the benefit of the kinds of training that I was able to get for trying to comply with labor law and Head Start performance standards.
Madam Chair, Representative Van Orman, I think you're hitting on a real issue. Understand, ultimately, our mission is educating kids. Right now, professional development is so focused on student achievement.
Mm-hmm.
Dollars for professional development are very limited. In the case of teachers, most of our professional development money is being spent, and we'll talk about professional development at length, but at some other point, but it goes into tuition reimbursement for their advanced education to improve, again, student achievement, which is such a focus right now. And in talking with the, there is a state personnel association, school personnel association, and it is an area they know, and we all know, needs to be worked on. It's just having the resources in public education for almost for the business side, which is what this is tricky when bottom line it's student achievement. We are just really stretched on trying to keep up with the demands, I mean, of the 21st century. We're making it, but we're going hard.
Thank you. Are there any further questions for this panel? No. Oh, Representative Mallard.
Just out of curiosity, how many more people do we have to speak?
Two.
Can I, kind of somewhat off of this, do we have districts that outsource their HR? Is that possible?
Representative Maurer, that's a good question. I don't believe so, but that's a very interesting question. Outsourcing, in terms of outsourcing, I think you may find some outsourcing to the ESD. In other words, they're going to a place with centralized expertise. We find increasingly business practices, particularly in very small districts, being outsourced to their ESD, where they can be a more centralized payroll, perhaps HR, substitute teacher is routinely handled by ESD. It's that kind of outsourcing. But in terms of a private HR department, I'm not aware of any.
Mm-hmm.
I would mention, Madam Chair, just as an afterthought, there is, I think, an area perhaps missing in the bill that if you wanted to look at or look at some future date would be private schools as well, whether this is the kind of standard we ought to expect of all educators in all situations. So I would ask you if you have an opportunity, it may be a chance to look at private schools as well, make sure everybody's working on the same page. We teachers do move around, and administrators and janitors and et cetera move around in all parts of both public and private education.
Thank you
very
much. Thank you both so much for coming in. Yes, can you send the survey results electronically to Roxy so she can get them out to the committee? Thank you. So next, and this is moving on to, well, we've got one person on both. Could we have Vicki Chamberlain, please? And Vicki, I have you signed up for both 2062 and 2063.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Vicki Chamberlain, the Executive Director of Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. Do you want me to testify on both?
Yes.
All
yes,
right,
please.
Great. Just one tiny thing on House Bill 2062. I'm sorry, it's not in writing. We'd like to request permission to work on this sort of some refining amendments on page 1, section 1, subsection little c. Right now, whether an educator has an active license is posted on our web. And in fact, it's posted the second the license is issued, so often that information is up on the web before the educator gets a hard copy of their license or whatever. Also, immediately following commission meetings, we're posting to individual educators' electronic file any order the commission enters. So it's a matter of a district going into our records, submitting the educator's social security number, the last four digits, and their birth date, and getting into a protected level, which will allow them to verify the licensure information and the order of discipline. And the reason I'd like to have that refined, the way it's ordered, the way it's written, I basically have to have staff on the ready in the fall when we are issuing licenses, answering phone calls, answering email, issuing emergency licenses, and I had to put a fiscal on this based on how it was worded. If we could have it be the district's responsibility to go get that information because it's there. So, and we would, of course, respond to any questions they had, but if you have all of the folks who are hiring calling us at the same time, it won't allow us to provide other services. So it's just a tiny little, we're there, we're electronic and the information is readily accessible. So that's just the only issue we had on this bill.
Any questions about that issue, Representative Revlin?
Yeah, Vicki, could we put that in, address that by just saying put it in the rule, that that's the way that's done? Or do you think the way it's written, we have to change what it's written?
Madam Chair, Representative Revlin, I don't know who's going to be writing these rules. I was thinking about that while I was sitting back there. The rest of these statutes are in Chapter 339, which belong to the State Board of Ed, which has jurisdiction of school districts. And that'd be fine with me. I want you to know the information is there. There doesn't need to be any direct statutory language. Not sure precisely why it's there, but I want you to know the information is readily available. And I was sitting there thinking, I don't think we're going to be drafting any rules on this particular bill.
Okay.
So does that make some sense?
Yeah.
And so the switch would be moving from a word like request to consult the TSPC, which is their access for TSPC records.
Yeah, and or you know something to the effect that school districts will verify that applicants are licensed and will inspect whether or not there's any existing disciplinary records out on them.
Through the TSPC website.
Yeah, through the TSPC, right, exactly.
And can you just write up a couple sentences to
send
to us that accomplish what you need? That'd be great.
Yeah. Oh, I can work with your committee staff on that if you'd like.
That'd be fantastic. Any other questions on 2062 before... Great, 2063.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record again, Vicki Chamberlain, TSPC, Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. It came up during the interim committees that every a very, very blue moon. We will run into information that hasn't been reported to DHS or law enforcement that appears to us to be possible child abuse. And so the way the bill came out is it would have all of the employees in my agency be mandatory reporters, which is really a big, broad brush. I'm asking for amendments that would reduce the staff subject to reporting to our investigatory staff and people who have direct access to that information, which would be me, my executive assistant who runs it, the support staff, and all the investigators. There's a the way we do our investigations and hold those files are totally separate from the licensure files. The licensure people don't have access to that information. They don't even know whether an educator is being investigated. So they would not be running across any of that information. So all I'm asking today are for amendments to just sort of reduce the scope of who in my office would be responsible if we did run into information that looked like there was child abuse that hadn't been reported.
Thanks. Any questions for Ms. Chamberlain? Thank you very much. And next we've got Nancy Baker Croft. And you're welcome to testify on 2062.
Ms. Chamberlain is busy. I'm glad she could get both of them done, and I'm sorry I was under the wrong bill. I'm only here because I read about it in the paper, so I wasn't familiar with which one I was supposed to be speaking on. Let me give you a little background to myself. I have been a teacher in the state of Oregon for 20 years. Ms. Chamberlain has not renewed my license. Let me tell you a little bit about why I am no longer a teacher in good standing. My house is messy. My husband left me. This is enough to cause you to be a child abuser under Marion County's laws. I have spent more than 2 years going to the appeals court. Let me give you a little background. I'm not just the person who walked in here. I worked in this legislative session in 77 for Mr. Frommeyer. I worked in 87 session for our former treasurer, Jim Hill. I have been educated at George Fox, a Christian college that's 25 miles away. I have never had any legal trouble before. But if you have a spouse that wants to make trouble, you can get a lot of trouble, especially if your teacher's license is in question. This bill scares me unless it has very strong protections, and I very much appreciate what Representative Van Orman has said. If you know Representative Krueger, I have worked with him because it is very possible to have things not be expunged for a very long time, and it is a long and expensive process. If you are innocent and you maintain your innocence and you fight through the court system, I was arrested on November 1st in 2006. My hearing before TSPC will not be until spring vacation this year. I have had to be under a cloud ever since. The particular rule that I have supposedly broken, which is criminal mistreatment 2, will not allow me to work for the ESD in our area, the Willamette ESD, which has been a substantial amount of my work over the last several years. I've also worked for Salem Kaiser, but I understand they have the same rubric. In this rubric, it says, you must not be guilty of any of these crimes, and if you are, you will not work for us until 3 years after the final probation is completed. For me, it is a 6-year hiatus from my profession. Currently, state law does have me some protection in that I am allowed to be certified pending my hearing. So after turning in my paperwork to be recertified with all my credentials in order, May 15th of last year, I was not notified by TSPC until the end of August, just before school was to start, that I was not being renewed. Having no renewal of my license allowed me only to work for a couple of districts who were willing to take a letter that TSPC writes that says she is okay pending her investigation. This obviously is in my file. This will take a long time to be expunged. I'm here on behalf of many people who I also know have been caught into a system that allows scout leaders, teachers, people who have been community volunteers, people who have tried to serve the best that they know how to be a safe adult mentor to kids. But the language in what your bill says must be very clearly stated. It must say sexual abuse. It must not say child abuse, because I can have a child abuse allegation in my DHS file, which I do, unless my appeal is overturning my decision, which in the Court of Appeals, that was, my case was heard in November of last year, if your court-appointed attorney, if you don't have very much money, is the person who represents you, you go to the appeals court, and if there's nothing they let you say in your defense, in your original case, you still don't have much to appeal. I might have to go to something called post-conviction relief, which will take me another probably couple of years. In the meantime, I'm sorry. It's really scary to be here today because this is public record. And I know a lot of people in the community, and it's terrifying to be here. But if I don't speak up for people who are victims, there's a woman who worked one day at a Woodburn school, grade school. She was escorted to the office at the end of the day, and that woman was accused of child abuse. She was terrified. She's been a teacher for 25 years. She says, I'm in menopause. I'm not sexually abusing anyone. She's confused. She's hurt. She's been out of work since May. She will have to raise $50,000 and sell her house to get herself legal counsel so that she can fight this. I know of another person whose boyfriend was accused of sexual abuse relating to her daughter. It was something that was rather trumped up. He passed the lie detector test, but it's on his record. She could have her license affected. Where do we draw the line? I think it's very important that each of you think about these things that I've had to share with you today before writing up legislation that is going to expel people who are, what is considered on some of those things, borderline behavior. That has to be spelled out so clearly. If my behavior is that I have loved my son and was busy teaching to try to keep from foreclosure on my home because my husband wasn't earning a living and my house was messy and that made me a child abuser in Marion County, you need to know this. And I'm very glad for this opportunity to speak, and I'm really sorry that I am kind of a waterworks person. But I love this process. I love the Education Committee. I have actually been a paid staff and worked for the Education Committee in the 87th session, and it's amazing to be on this side of the microphone. Thank you, Representative Kelser.
Well, welcome back to the Capitol, and thank you for stepping up. I know it's very difficult to provide that type of testimony, and it's very important to have a clear record, and I appreciate that very much. So thank you. Are there questions for... No? Thank you. Yes, Representative Parker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks again for the obviously heartfelt testimony. Do you have specific recommendations of specific language in here that should be changed to address these issues, these kind of gray area issues?
Our work session is next Wednesday, but when you talked about the borderline behavior and the boundaries, I'm wondering if you're reading about the bills that they're hearing in the Senate today.
I have not read the bill.
So this bill, the 2062, is about sexual abuse, and it states sexual abuse in the bill. However, in the Senate, there's a bill that's being heard that talks about boundaries and what appropriate boundaries are, and I believe that hearing is at 3 o'clock.
Yes, I'm familiar with that. However, the synopsis that was put in the Statesman Journal, the Salem Record newspaper, specifies suspected child abuse or disciplined employee allows parent to bring action if school did not investigate abuse. And so when the word abuse is put forth a second and third time, each time it does not specify sexual abuse. It merely says abuse. And so if we're going to look at the child abuse wording, I think that's maybe where the clarity could come in.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Dembro.
Yeah, I think that the witness from whom, or the testifier, the citizen, brings up a good point that, in one small b, it makes a reference to an ORS that that relates to abuse. So, you know, it says, or abuse as that term is defined in ORS 419B.005. So it would be good to see just what that, if that is all abuse or if that is specifically sexual abuse.
Thank you. Representative Thatcher.
Oh, I just want to make the comment that we do, well, we don't want to pass the trash, of course, but we definitely want to proceed with caution before we take away somebody's ability to earn a living.
And are there further questions? Is there any? Thank you very, very much.
Thank you for the
coming.
And I will get back to you by Wednesday when we have the work session with some concrete written language.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. Is there anyone else in the room that is interested in testifying on House Bill 2062 or House Bill 2063? Before I close the hearing, our intent is to Representative Thatcher.
Well, I had a question, I guess,
yeah,
for the committee. Maybe since I'm new to this committee, you could update me. On 2063, it adds employees of teachers, standards, and practices commission to the list of persons required, you know, mandatory reporters. Are employees other than teachers required to report? Are school board members required to report?
Yes.
All those people. Okay.
Yes.
I was hearing
reporters.
Indications that maybe that not wasn't the case. So.
Representative Rutland.
And that was one of the things that Mrs. Chamberlain talked about, was the fact that all of the people who investigate in that side of it probably should be reporters, as police officers and others are. But the people who are back in the office that don't ever see that stuff, that might be going overboard. So she was going to get us, I think, some language about where that line should be drawn. And I agree with what you're saying. There are people who would be appropriate in that office because they're going to be out there looking anyway. So if they see something, that they should be around to report it. Otherwise, they shouldn't.
Representative Maurer,
I think when you start parsing out what a mandatory reporter is within an agency, it gets very difficult.
Okay.
I mean, we are mandatory reporters, as we all know, because we attended the training, and it is, you know, how much contact do we have with, we could say, well, we don't have contact. I just think that,
you do in the grocery store.
You know, if you work there in a TSPC, that, you know, that's one of your obligations.
I think clearly as an adult in the state of Oregon, if you are aware of a child being abused, whether you are a mandatory reporter or not, your conscience should mandate that you immediately report and step up to the assistance of that child. Representative Innerman? Or was that Representative Parker?
Here.
Hand that I saw moving.
No, I was just probably back here.
Okay, I thought I saw my hand down there. All right. So with these bills, we're going to come back next Wednesday for a work session. Certainly I expect from some of our stakeholders we'll be getting some suggested language. I'll share that with you over the course of the week. If you have language, suggestions, ideas, let's get them shared across the board. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on 2062 and 2063 and open a work session for the purpose of introduction of committee bills.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Dimbro.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have three potential bills I'd like to introduce.
Okay.
I move that the following legislative concepts be introduced as committee bills. First, LC-1877, dated 1-27-09. Then LC-1946, dated 1-16-09. And finally, LC-2303, dated 1-16-09.
I've got this one right here. And I'm just noticing, so thank you for that, motion.
1946.
And I think that there is, if there's an error on the green sheet, do we need to address that now or can we address that later? Okay, great. So, and just two process points. One,
Generally, the introduction of a committee bill is not a commitment to support the bill. It's just an opening the spigot and letting it into the system. 1877 adjusts the modified diploma language that we adopted last session. House Bill 1946 is related to health education and specifically sex education standards. And House Bill LC 2303 has to do with student fees for graduate student assistance. And are there questions or objections to introduction of the bills, of the measures? Representative Maurer?
I just want to emphasize, this does not mean you support the bill concepts, and you know we are opening up Pandora's box.
Correct. I recognize that at least one of these bills will lead to a full committee hearing room and lots of discussion, and I enjoy hosting that discussion and learning more from each of you at that point in time. So without objection, the three bills are introduced. And the House Committee on Education is adjourned.